everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of the Total Rugby League Show. I'm your host, Ben, and round the table, we're joined once again by the great and good of rugby league journalism. Doug Thompson is here, Matthew Shaw is here, and Martin Sadler's here.
Good morning.
Good morning, everyone. If Martin's the great and Doug's the good, what am I?
And... Right, so welcome everyone. A fixture preview for this weekend's big matches in Super League coming your way shortly. But also coming up, we're going to be talking about the new NCL season, as we're going to be joined by League Express's very own grassroots oracle, Mr. Phil Hodgson. Plus, we're going to talk about Rugby League in Africa, as well as the launch of the Learning Disability Super League. But before all of that, there is only one place we can start this week, and that's the World Cup Challenge. Doug, what would Wigan do to forget that first 10 minutes last week?
Absolutely, yeah. And yeah, the slow starters, I think you could say, with Wigan, weren't they? But, you know, thankfully came back into it, and it didn't turn out to be the completely one-sided contest that we feared at one stage. But for me, it's just still showed that gulf that exists between the NRL and Super League, unfortunately.
I mean, was it you tweeted about schoolboy defending? I can't quite remember, but it was.
Matt mentioned it in his report.
Yeah, they were a bit startled, weren't they, to begin with?
Well,
but they did get used to the idea.
Well, look, at the end of the day, it is the biggest domestic match in World Rugby League. And the defending for the first two tries was under 8 standard, wasn't it? It was horrendous. But after that, I thought Wigan really applicated themselves superbly. I think there was a lesson to be learnt, to be honest. And I thought it was evident in the second half. The first half, I thought Wigan tried to go toe-to-toe with the Roosters. Down the middle, getting what we call the arm wrestle. It didn't work. They didn't make as many metres. They were always from their own half. George Williams was then ineffective because he didn't have the ball to play with. The Roosters were making more metres. In the second half, Wigan started throwing the ball around. They were offloading at will. They were spreading the play quick. And they had far more success that way. And for me, I think everyone's been frustrated by Wigan not doing that because they have the players to do it.
Well, it's always been the case that if we try and play the Australians at the Australians game, we never win. So, you know, if you look back at some of the really historic wins over the Aussies that we've had in the last 30 or so years, it's generally always been when we've played our own style of play and thrown the ball around, perhaps taken risks and so on, and we've shocked them. And we never shock them when we try and wrestle with them because they're better at it. You know, they invest so much of their training into those techniques, so it seems silly. I mean, the other thing is, of course, that you know, we can talk about Wigan's schoolboy defending, and of course there's quite a bit in that. But you've got to give credit to Brett Morris, who is a great player, in my opinion, has been for many years. I've always been a tremendous fan of the two twins, Brett and Josh Morris. You know, it was fantastic to see them playing together at the Bulldogs. But now, of course, Brett has come across to the Roosters. He's in his early 30s, but he's still a great player, as he showed on Sunday. So let's not be absolutely too critical of Wigan, you know, in the sense that they couldn't handle Brett in that first 10 minutes in particular, because plenty of other sides, even in Australia, have had the same problem with him. And it was interesting, actually, a few years ago, there was some speculation because I think the two twins were born in this country, in fact, when their father was over here. And so there was a lot of talk about them, you know, they could have played for England. And I'm really reluctant to see Australians playing for England. But in the case of the Morris twins, I think I might have changed my opinion.
The game itself, though, it was a great occasion. Over 20,000 people there, a good atmosphere, and Sydney looked happy to win it.
I thought the Roosters were a credit to the competition, weren't they?
Yeah, really? They were tremendous. Trent Robinson in particular, the way he spoke after the game, you know. But all the other players as well, you know, Cooper Cronk and Brett Morris too, you know. They all said the right things, didn't they? And a lot of people say, well, they say them, but they don't mean them. But they really did. You could tell from what they were saying. You know, Trent Robinson's tribute to Sean O'Loughlin was heartfelt, in my opinion. And the crazy thing is, there was an article in the Sunday Times with that incredible headline, you know, Wigan are playing a team that couldn't care less, or whatever the headline said. pathetic, isn't it, really, that a national newspaper is coming out with that sort of absolute garbage.
Are we going for the Times on this show this week? Is that what we're doing?
Well, that's...
It was an absolute disgrace.
It's about time somebody really got hold of the national media with Rugby League and sorted them out, because, you know, when the only publicity you get comes from an appalling headline like that, then something needs doing about it, doesn't it, really?
I should also add as well, Sydney Roosters did a good bit of work last week in France as well, as part of the trip over. Yeah. So well, big congratulations to Sydney and commiserations to Wigan. Wigan returned to action on Sunday, back to Super League to take on Hull. And speaking of the Super League, there was a couple of matches last weekend, bizarrely. Leeds got their first league win of the season, beating Salford convincingly as well, 46 points to 14. Doug, that was
interesting. Yeah, I mean, we talked about this last week, didn't we, saying that perhaps it was Leeds at the most dangerous. And I think we said last week that if you look at Leeds over the last sort of 3 or 4 years, they've been very inconsistent in terms of either fantastic or they're down in the depths. And that was a great performance and really took Salford by surprise a little bit. Obviously, Salford had a great start to the season themselves. Not burst the bubble, but just equalised things and just reminded you that it's still very early in the season and every season you get some strange results early on and things settle down after a while.
Was that better from Leeds?
Yeah, I was surprised by the result. I thought Salford would beat them, but... They proved what they can do. I thought Hurrell looked really, really good. Hopefully, it's a sign of what Leeds can be. I'm sure there'll still be a few bumps in the road. Salford, I know, were disappointed with their performance, but the way Salford had played the first two games to overcome them and in the manner they did was impressive.
Well, the thing that was interesting about that game was that apart from Jack Walker scoring 3 tries, you know, and he's really looking the part this year. But the other thing was they scored 5 tries in the last 21 minutes, which tends to indicate that Leeds' fitness and, you know, match preparation is pretty good. I mean, they blew the score out. It was pretty level until 59 minutes. But then, as I say, Conrad Hurrell scored his second try at that point, and they just scored 4 others fairly quickly. And, you know, Salford... It was disappointing for Salford, wasn't it? Because I'd really like to see Salford doing well. I'm really keen to see... Because they're in the heart of Greater Manchester, you know, right next to the M60 motorway, I'd love to see them really doing well and drawing in big crowds. And it's disappointing, really, for me that they, you know, just had a great opportunity on Sunday and blew it really effectively, but hopefully they'll come back. And you know, this coming weekend they're at Hull Kingston Rovers on Saturday, which is a really interesting game for them, I think. And you know, it's an interesting game for both clubs. Both clubs on 4 points after those weekend matches, so you know, be interesting to see how it goes.
Well, Hull KR came from behind at home to beat London on Sunday as well, 22-12. So Hull KR second win of the season, and as you rightly say, Martin, it's Hull KR against Salford on Saturday. St Helens taking on Leeds on Friday night, the Friday night TV game. That's going to be an interesting one, Doug.
Definitely, yeah, really interesting. You know, like you say, can Leeds do it again? Obviously, showed what they're capable of. Sure, the potential is there, like Matt says, but you know, obviously, a good team does it on a regular basis, and Leeds have struggled sometimes to do that.
I think it might be a bit more difficult against St Helens, you know, but it should be a great game. It's one to look forward to.
Absolutely. The TV matches, they'll kick off on Thursday night with Wakefield against Castellan Dragons. That's an intriguing game, Matt.
Yeah, the story is Danny Brough, isn't it? 500th career appearance, which is just phenomenal. It is an interesting game because Wakefield, look, 0-2, an encouraging performance despite losing to St Helens. But if they go 0-3, that's not a nice place to be. And I think they went 0-3 last year and then beat Saints. But yeah, look, London game, poor, better against Saints. But the concern for me with Wakefield is we were told that this year with the recruitment they'd made, those games that they lost narrowly, they would start to win. That hasn't happened yet. You know, that they've not made a raft of signings. It's not like there should be a bedding in period. So
I think with Wakefield, yeah, though, they were a bit unfortunate to be the first team going down to London, because London were really highly motivated for that game and played incredibly well against them, I thought. Then, of course, the second game was against St Helens. at home, but they lost that narrowly by, you know, it was a one score margin, wasn't it? So it wasn't as though they disgraced themselves in that game.
It was right at the death as well, so
yeah, it was. And you would imagine, I mean, Catalans, you know, also, I mean, these are two teams actually that have both been described as likely to improve in 2019. So the Catalans will be coming as well to, you know, want to reinforce their first win, which they had against Huddersfield. And, you know, Matty Smith and Sam Tompkins and, you know, Matt Whitley. I think Matt Whitley's been one of the stars of the season so far, incidentally. I thought he was outstanding against Huddersfield. So it's going to be a really fascinating game, really good one for people to watch on television tonight if they're not at the game itself. You know, I think it's really going to be an exciting match.
I think it's interesting what Matt mentioned about Wakefield having to learn to win those games that they lose narrowly, but the St Helens game suggests that they aren't learning to. Yes. You know, they've done that time and time again over the years, but, you know, where they get really close to pulling off big wins but don't quite manage it.
Well, it happened last year. They lost like six on the bounce, but the combined score of defeat was something daft like 14.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's all well and good, but then if you've got to turn that around eventually, haven't you?
And the other factor, of course, is that Danny Brough has been sin-binned in the first two games.
Needed to stay
we
on
can't
the pitch.
Mention this every
week. No, well, we've got to stop doing it eventually, as long as he stops being sin-binned. But, you know, he's got to control himself. I mean, I love Danny Brough. I think he's a fabulous player. I love watching him play. I think he's got probably the best kicking game in the league. But his kicking game is not much good if he's on the, you know, off the field having been sin-binned.
The other TV game this weekend is on Saturday, and that's London against Castleford, where Ealing opens up to the TV cameras this season. What do you reckon? Because the last time London played there wasn't too bad, was it? Against a team from that Pontefract area?
I think Castleford will now have been given a warning, weren't they? That, you know, they can't afford to underestimate the Broncos. And I don't think they'll go down thinking that a win is going to be automatic. And it certainly won't be. The Broncos obviously played pretty well at Hull KR in the first half to be leading. So, you know, they're still a bit of an unknown quantity, I think, to me. But I can't really see them beating Castleford. You know, Castleford are just a top Super League side, in my view, even without Luke Gale. So, you know, I'd say Castleford by about 10 in that game.
I think Castle blow them away, actually. Reason being, Castleford love the fast tracks.
Mm. Although, do they love artificial pitches?
I think the artificial pitch will suit Cass, actually, yeah, because of that explosive quality that they've got about it.
They really turn defence into attack quick.
Without doing too much research, I'd like to see what they've done at Widnes in the last couple of, under Darryl Powell. I imagine the record's quite good. I just think the fast track will really, really suit Cass. I think they'll be better at doing what London do than what London do, so to speak.
I know what you mean, man.
Yeah.
And finally, a brand new feature we're doing this week, which is like a rugby league version of Casualty. Huddersfield against Warrington. I'll come to you, Dr. Shaw. How are Huddersfield?
They're improving. There are signs of improvement. The antibiotics are working. Kumatai should be back. Lee Gaskell should be back. And Jemima Gilvery could be back. So, three big boosts there. You know, they're three big players.
Is that going to be enough against Warrington?
No.
Well, we tried. Anyway.
Very quick return for Jermaine McGilvery, isn't it? Because he was going to be out for 2 months, wasn't he?
I think they said 6 to 8 weeks.
Well, Huddersfield have actually got a good record against Warrington.
Yeah, they do.
Very good at home, haven't they?
They always seem... Yeah, it's funny, isn't it, how some teams always seem to play well against certain other teams, and Huddersfield do that against Warrington. I don't know whether we want to mention this signing of Luther Burrell, though, by Warrington, because that's gone a bit under the radar, really. I mean, for a club to sign an England international rugby union player has always been a really massive thing in the past, but it's, you know, it seems to have been ignored by most of the media this week.
Can't think why.
And, you know, it's apparently going to join them in July.
When the union season ends, isn't it?
Yeah. Luther Burrell is a really big, strong guy. He's a really... actually, he's been a tremendous rugby union player. Whether at 31 he can still do it, you know, and switch to rugby league with the different sort of aerobic demands that rugby league makes is going to be fascinating to see. But, you know, it's a really big signing by Warrington. And I'm just quite fascinated to see how little the media's picked up on it.
It's only my opinion, and I accept that this might be an unpopular or an incorrect one. I don't care for rugby union. I don't watch rugby union. The only reason I know Lou Fabarelli is because when I was at university, at the University of Huddersfield, when we did sports bulletins, he was Huddersfield born, so we spoke about what he was doing. If it weren't for that, I would not have known who Lou Fabarelli was. Now, I accept that that's my lack of knowledge rather than anything, but I think generally the cross between the two codes is the knowledge is weakening. I do genuinely believe that it is becoming increasingly you are either a union supporter or a league supporter. I don't think there's a lot of people that watch both. There are people out there who watch both, but generally I do think that's lacking now. We were talking about a player, and we won't ruin it because we might be running it in League Express on Monday, but we were talking about a player this morning that could be coming over, and this guy was allegedly one of the best players in the world a couple of years ago, and I had no idea who he was. No idea.
Matt Shaw admitting his ignorance.
Social media bubbles.
I just don't care for union. I think there's a lot of people who don't.
But that is true. Social media has sort of polarised things, hasn't it? You one
not
or
just
the
rugby,
other.
Martin.
Oh,
not
no,
just
not
rugby.
Just rugby. No, indeed. But it certainly is a tendency. And but it's still disappointing to see the national media sort of not giving prominence to what really is quite a big story.
By the way, I just want to clear up, when I was saying that, I wasn't talking about Sonny Bill Williams, because I do know who Sonny Bill Williams is.
Yeah, yeah. Not that I can. This is the fourth episode, and we've already gone after the Sunday Times and now Rugby Union as well. Mm. Come on, come on, we'll take you all on.
Anyway, there's a link between those two things, isn't there? Rugby Union.
You said that, Doug, not me. Right, the League One season also kicked off this past weekend. 1,800 people saw a great game between Newcastle and Doncaster, which Donny eventually won. And just like Tyler, that as well, the crowd at Coventry, it was over 500, which was about 200 less, give or take, than Oldham had and Whitehaven had. So that's heading in the right direction. And
yeah, absolutely.
I think Coventry definitely are, aren't they? Of the expansion teams that we've talked about, they're the ones who've got the really solid grassroots and are doing things in a sensible system. Not that the other clubs aren't, but they're doing it in a very measured and system. Sustainable way at Coventry.
That would be a very disappointing result for Newcastle Thunder, wouldn't it? They were winning 22-4 at half time. We made Doncaster our team of the week, actually, in League Express for coming back.
Great
from
comeback
a 22-4
by Doncaster, wasn't it?
Half time deficit. Yeah. And, great start for, Richard Horn getting that start, to the season for Doncaster, when Newcastle were one of the favourites, actually, for promotion this year.
I mean, I think Doncaster's worry, or not worry in a way, is obviously they rely very heavily on the dual registration, and it obviously depends who you can get that particular week.
Well, speaking to Richard, he's bolstered the squad up. He's got it up to 21, I think, of his own players this
season.
Yeah, they have signed a lesson from last year.
They signed a couple just recently,
They'll have dual reg as well.
Mm. Yeah, oh, sorry, Matthew,
on the day, a good side, though, Doncaster, so. Mm.
And in Championship, just two teams left now with 100% records. Sheffield beat Bradford, another great game there on Friday night. And Toronto defeated Widnes to maintain their winning start to the season as well. I think Sheffield are still on top of the
interesting
rankings.
To see that Sheffield had over 1,700 people there. I mean, they're a lot from Bradford, of course, which is great to see Bradford's away support. But, Sheffield, I've thought for years that Sheffield is a potential rugby league, giant. And it's starting from very small beginnings these days, but it's great to see them at the top of the league. Interesting trip to Widnes this weekend for them. Are Widnes going to be there? Widnes is a strange thing, isn't it? They've put out some great social media stuff, I think. They've got a great PR team behind them, I think. Unfortunately, that's combined with no money, it seems.
Well, they signed Anthony Gillen, didn't they, recently.
I should come out with a disclaimer. This bit is recorded at about 11:30 on Thursday morning, just in case news breaks in the afternoon.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a difficult situation, isn't it?
Well, there's a few things that don't sit right with me here. This is the second year that a team has got relegated, has been given a parachute payment. What's happened to that?
Yeah.
What's happened to the transfer fee they got for Danny Walker? I don't understand. We had a Q&A. I was looking back on a Q&A I did with James Rowling, League Express, less than 10 months ago, and he said that they were on break even and they got rid of historical debt. So what's happened in those last 10 months? Or was that
Well, a lot of people on social media and on forums and that kind of thing are trying to make the link between what's going on at Widnes with what happened at Keighley, what happened at Barrow. Is that a bit too easy to start looking at the
obvious comparison, the obvious comparison is Widnes Lee, isn't it? Because they've both come down.
Mm. Now,
Lee were in trouble for a completely different reasons to why Widnes were in trouble. Lee just spent a ridiculous amount of money on the squad, and it failed. Widnes haven't done that. They've cut the budget drastically.
Well, so they say, anyway. But, I mean, signing players like Gelling, they can't come cheap, can they?
Well, no. Gelling's on a lot, but they kept the contracts that all the under-23 players were on are the same. Mm. But then if you look at the players they did get rid of, they did get rid of a lot and didn't bring that many in. They brought in Anthony Gelling, Adam Tangata, and Liam Hood, and Jack Owens. So they brought four in, and then the young halfback who will be on peanuts, I would imagine. But, you know, they will have, and if you look at the list of players they lost, the squad is smaller, the squad won't cost as much. But, and you'd expect that, you know, you go down in division, that's the case. But even still, how have they found themselves in this position?
There are lots of questions to be asked, aren't there? Yeah. And unless you're familiar with their, you know, financial affairs, it's very difficult to know what the answers are, actually.
And is it systematic of the sport? Is this where we are at the moment with clubs? There's going to be a club going into administration every season, or?
Well, we hope not. But the problem is that when you get relegated from Super League, your income goes down drastically, doesn't it? From central TV distribution, and that's going to be a problem for any club that has to experience it. And it's true in other sports as well. You know, promotion relegation can hit you in the pocket because you get less income, you know, after you are relegated. The thing is, though, in some other sports, they start from much higher bases, don't they? And so they manage to survive. But we've always seen that you know, relegation is a financial burden for clubs, and they need somehow to have a strategy to overcome it. And maybe Widnes just didn't have one.
The other questions here. The amount of clubs that get themselves in trouble like this, is there a fit and proper persons test in rugby league?
That's what I was going to bring up, because I did a bit of research, because obviously, you know, there are a lot of people who are saying maybe it's the sport generally, the structure of the sport, maybe there's too many people speculating and not getting a return and that kind of thing. But in football, since 2012, between the years of 2012 and 2017, 17 football league clubs have faced winding up petitions. And they include clubs like Portsmouth, Bolton Wanderers, whose stadium we're going to be using in a couple of years' time, Coventry and Birmingham. So I think it might be just general rather than a problem with the sport of rugby league. It's just a problem with sport.
Tough times for sports clubs, because obviously, you know, wages have gone up a lot over the last 10 years, you know, out of sync with other things. You're always going to get clubs who chase the dream, aren't you? Particularly, probably more in football than in rugby league, but and as a result of that, end up in trouble and end up over the next, not immediately afterwards, but sometimes 5 or 6 years afterwards, where, you know, everything catches up with them. And that's, I mean, the worrying thing to me in rugby league is that a lot of the problems highlight that there's a lot of sort of short-termism in the way that clubs seem to look at finances. You know, one minute everything seems to be okay, the next it's...
And is that where Matthew's right in the kind of fit and proper test and...
Possibly, or perhaps it's just the financial fair play that UEFA brought in.
Give you a little story that I always found quite interesting. That many, many years ago, when there were 14 teams in what's now the NRL in Australia, there were worries about, you know, finances at clubs just the same as we have here. And the league set up a survey of how clubs had sorted their finances for the forthcoming season. And they found that of the 14 clubs, 11 of them were planning their finances on the basis that they'd be in the grand final. You know, and that's what clubs do, isn't it? They take the most optimistic view possible. Yeah, they take the most optimistic view possible about what's going to happen to them. And, of course, for most of them, it can't do, can
it? It's weird, because I find it quite a pessimistic sport at times. To err on the side of optimism is very unusual, isn't it?
the other thing with Widnes, though, as well, I'd just like to know they've got in that position.
Well, we wish Kieran Pirtle and everyone at the club well.
Well, you feel sorry for the likes of Kieran Patel, Jack Owens, Jack Owens, who was at Lee, Harrison Hanson, who was at Lee, who have already been through this and are going through it again.
Out of the frying pan into the fire.
It's awful. I feel so sorry for them. William Hood as well.
There is light at the end of the tunnel. I mean, when I was looking at the list of Football League clubs who've gone bust over the years, I saw Newport County in 1989 bust completely. And last week,
Huddersfield Town. Fifteen years ago, they were in administration.
Newport last week were playing City in the fifth round of the FA Cup as a fan home club. Reborn. Yeah. So it is possible. But best of luck to everyone to witness. Right, totalrl.com, the place to visit for all the latest news, not just at Widnes, but across the sport of rugby league. Let's move on to the NCL. The NCL season partially kicks off this weekend with Division 3 sides taking to the field this Saturday. So on Tuesday this week, I caught up with League Express's very own Mr. Grassroots, Phil Hodgson. His surname isn't Grassroots, I do apologise, for his take on the upcoming season for the National Conference.
Well, the thing I always look out for with the third division, the bottom tier, is the new teams that come in. New teams that enter the National Conference League always have to enter the bottom tier. This season's intake, very strong clubs with good pedigrees. For example, Youth have come back into the National Conference League. They were the first team to win what was then the National League back in 1986-87. And then they fell upon hardish times on the field in recent years, pulled out of the conference in 2015. But now they are back in, and they're a club that I often ride to, a club that set the template for the National Conference League before it had even been thought of, with the sporting attitude and the general way they conduct themselves.
I was going to say with the Hewer thing, that's kind of come on the back as well as of a bit of a rejuvenation in the sport in North Yorkshire around the York City Knights and stuff, and that is bearing fruit in the local community game, it looks like.
Yeah, I think so. York Acorn are going pretty well as well in their competitions in the Challenge Cup, you know. So, there's a feel-good factor around York at the moment, which is fantastic to see.
Absolutely. Also new to the league is the Batley Boys. What can we expect from the former Yorkshire Men's League side?
They're a strong club as well. They've been going for quite a while. They're based these days at Mount Pleasant, or the Foxes Biscuit Stadium. They've gone well in the Yorkshire Men's League, and this is a very intriguing game. The Hunslet Warriors, who were have been relegated for, I think, the second successive season, but still a very strong club. Hunslet Warriors have just appointed in the last week or two Jonathan Schofield as head coach.
Right.
He replaced Jamie Benn, who's gone north of the river to Milford. Smashing lad is Jonathan Schofield. He's obviously a chip off the old block in the son of Gary Schofield. It'd be good to see Hunslet Warriors regroup. It'd also be good to see Batley Boys consolidate. And then the other game, which has got the new lads in the conference, is Hensingham of Cumbria at Wolston Rovers. Wolston, former Giants themselves, still a massive club, but at one time they were arguably the best team about 20 years ago in amateur rugby league. No longer quite the case, but I think they'll go well. So that's another intriguing game for Saturday. So very much at this stage of the season in the third division, matter of watching how the new boys go.
Absolutely. And you mentioned the Hunslet Warriors. Also, it'll be interesting to see how Lee East get on as well with their relegation last season, and if they can bounce back. But just a quick mention as well for the other three tiers. Obviously, those matches don't kick off for another couple of weeks, but while we've got you on, Phil, we might as well cover them. In Division 2, a cracking season last season for Beverley. Can they mirror that? And can Barrow Island mirror their season as well that they had?
Yeah, I think both can. It'd be interesting to see. I mean, Beverley lost just one game last season, which I think was to Barrow Island, actually. So they're riding high. Whether they can maintain that impetus under Scott Taylor will be interesting to see. And it's a tough game they've got to start with. They're at Hull Dockers. That game should be a cracker.
And just one step above Division 2 is Division 1. And I was looking through the teams and I was thinking to myself, that's a hell of a division, isn't it?
Yeah. Always is, actually, then, to be fair. Teams that get promoted from Division 1 when they talk to me pre-season tend to talk privately. They're always a little bit worried. If I mention one club in particular where that may not necessarily be the case, about 12 months ago, I was talking to Paul Thorpe, the Hunslet Club Park side secretary, on the pitch side prior to their pre-season friendly against Hunslet. And they said, oh, we're a bit worried. We hope we'll consolidate. Hope we'll be okay. And what they actually did was they went through the season unbeaten. You know, so I don't think there's necessarily that much between the Premier Division and Division One, to be honest. That's that little bit of intensity week in, week out. But yeah, you got some cracking teams in that first division. Wigan St Pat's, of course, so this is the first time they've been outside the top flight, and they'll be playing Featherstone Lions. They'll want to get off to a flyer, both will. Usually more against Stanningley. You know, Stanningley will be, I assume they'll have the coaches, Ash Golding and Gordon Lilly in place for that. You've got Skirla, again, they're one of the teams that when they join the National Conference League, absolute giants of the game, stroll through the divisions. They'll want to get back to the Premier Division as soon as they can. And Normanton were relegated last year, having had a very good start in the Premier Division. In fact, they were one of the teams that took Hunslet Club Park side closest. So, yeah, you got some crackers. And York Aiken, I've already mentioned, there at Pilkington Rex. So, yeah, some absolute massive games and very entertaining games as well.
Premier Division last season it was the Hunslet Club Parkside show, wasn't it, really? Unbeaten all the way through the season. Can they do that again?
They can do it again. The thing that impressed me most about Hunslet Club Parkside and the way that they went through without dropping a single point was that they didn't have it their own way by any means in many of the games. They had to tough out quite a lot of those games. I think Normanton took them within 2 points. They beat West Hull. They beat West Hull 4 times in total. That's twice in the league, once in the semi-final playoff and once in the grand final. But I don't think there's 20 points between the two teams in all 4 games. So, Hunslet Club Park side showed great resilience in many games when they had to carve out a win and grind out a win. And they did it time after time after time. They can do it again, but others could do it as well. Thornhill, who've just been promoted as champions, won at Hunslet Club Parkside in the Challenge Cup 2 or 3 weeks ago. They're another team that could potentially go unbeaten, but you might well say that about every other team in that division. You know, it's how it goes on every day, and Hunslet Club Parkside got that momentum. They've got the nous on the sidelines of Martin Rouse, the former Baller Great Britain head coach, Sam Thorpe, and of course Paul McShane, who brought a lot of know-how to the table as well. So, not impossible, but it's a big order, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it was a hell of a season for them last year, but like you say, it's a very competitive top 12 of the National Conference, heading into Division 1 and below, but all eyes on Division 3 this weekend. And just a quick plug for your column as well, Talking Grassroots, Phil. You'll have all the rundown of the results in next Monday's League Express.
Yes, we're doing a full round. We're back into the swing now. We'll have the scoreboard there and a game of the day where we'll have a full report on that one and, of course, a roundup and all the other matches as well.
So, Phil Hodgson there. National Conference League has expanded this season. That's good to see, isn't it, Doug?
Definitely, yeah. And, you know, some progressive clubs.
So let's hope they're not being too optimistic about their financial state.
But, you know, the National Conference League's interesting, isn't it? Because it sort of goes a little bit under the radar, but you've got some really strong clubs in there. You know, you look at Hunslet Club Parkside last season, won everything that they could have done, won every match.
It's interesting what Phil said about the fact he was speaking to the secretary before the start of last season from Hunslet Club Parkside, because they'd just been promoted and they weren't too sure how they were going to fare in the Premier Division. So there you go. Yeah. Now, last week we mentioned the rise of the game in Africa, and in last month's Rugby League World, we learned about the growth of the game in Nigeria. Well, on Monday, I caught up with Ade Adebisi, General Manager of the Nigerian Rugby League, to find out more.
So right now we're schools level. The National League should be starting soon with... They're getting trained right now. So we have in the coaches trained, we have in the, you know, the referees trained. So to be able to get to the standard we need it to get to. We have 4 teams in Lagos and then 4 in the north of Nigeria. So in Jos and in Kano, but the names will be and released soon. I think we just released two of the names, Lagos Rhinos and Joss as well. So Joss Minor. So yeah, big activities, grassroots, universities. It's just going to be pumping rugby league within, you know, we have 40 schools already lined up in Lagos. We have 20 in Kano. You know, we're earmarking the universities, about 25 universities around the country. So yeah, you know, we want you know, rugby league. I know we're never gonna get like football, but we want it to be the second most, you know, popular, especially within grassroots Nigeria.
But is all this from a relatively standing start? How long has this taken to get it to this stage?
No. It's taken quite a while. You know, I've been in Nigeria now. I went to Nigeria. I'm back in the UK. I went to Nigeria about 3 years ago now. So it's not just a standing start. We've had to do a lot of groundwork. We've had to do a lot of approvals to be recognised. So we've done heaps of work in the background, and it's just now that things are coming into place. So you know, we've worked well. There's a guy there that's, you know, one of the trustees, Martin Crawford. You know, he's done well as well. He's been he got awarded the OBE recently for his work actually in the community and rugby in Nigeria. So the foundations that's been set down, and so he's set some good foundations, and then we just need to build on those foundations now.
How have the local populace taken to the sport as well? Because it's a relatively simple sport to pick up, isn't it? I mean, you get a ball,
yeah,
and you run,
yeah,
that way.
For sure, it's a lot. Definitely, it's more exciting to watch. Definitely, it's explosive, and rugby league is for all shapes and sizes. You know, if you're a big boy, you know, there's something there for you. If you're, you know, if you're an athlete, there's something there for you as well. It's amazing how people love it. And we're trying to even get it into the women's now. I mean, we're going to start, you know, by maybe introducing the tag rugby with, you know, the women's and build on that. But, you know, we have school girls playing rugby, and they're playing it in the schools.
When we look at the population in Nigeria, there's a lot of people there. Sport is a great leveller, but there's so much potential as well to change people's lives with the sport. I mean, what's your take on that side of things?
This, for me, this is not just rugby for me. You know, I suffered from a life-threatening condition called sickle cell. And, you know, in Nigeria, there's a big stigma about you know, the condition, because education around it, because, you know, people are not educated well, so they just think, oh, a person that has sickle cell, that's it, their life is over, they're condemned. You know, they don't even give them a chance, nobody gives them a chance. So it's a huge stigma, and it's a huge problem in Nigeria, because then that's the most, you know, if you look at the world population and in regards to people that have sickle cell, Nigeria has the most. So it's a huge problem that, you know, I personally want to tackle, to eradicate the stigma around it and educate the parents as well. So that's a big thing. And how do we do that? We do it through rugby. We're already going to be in the schools, so we can set up programs. You know, we can do a lot of things with pharmaceutical companies. It's just so many things around what we're trying to do that we can, if we have, you know, just need, you know, the right people, the right support, which we have. We're getting some good help, but we just need to be able to make some more noise on what we're trying to do, because it's not just about the rugby, it's about saving people's lives as well. And, you know, that's key, because, you know, like I said, I've been given this opportunity through rugby, and it would be silly of me and not to try and give something back and educate people that, look, your life is not over, you have sickle cell, but you can still try and achieve whatever you want if you focus and channel your energy.
And to that end as well, I mean, the Middle East and Africa Rugby League Championships are going to be hosted by Nigeria. And we spoke about it last week on the show about the rugby league activity, not just in Nigeria, but across the continent. Very, very encouraging. And obviously, we'll have more details about the tournament later in the year. But is everyone looking forward to that?
Oh, man, I tell you what. I live and breathe it now. You know, I wake up in the morning, I think, oh, we're talking to so many players. We're talking to some great players. You know, we have, you know, as well as obviously creating the local leagues, you know, we didn't have to then combine those players that we're going to create with the international players. And we're speaking to, you know, some great players in Australia. We have Jaden, who plays for the Canterbury Bulldogs. You know, he's keen, you know, since he's been there since day one. He's been excited. You know, we have some good players. And even in England now, you know, we have Warren C, we have Will Sharp, we have one of the guys, Saqib, who plays for London Broncos. So we have good, talented Nigerians that people don't know. But, you know, we even have a surprise coming up. We're just trying to sort out to find out if he's maybe qualified. And then I think the Rugby League World will be surprised as well once we make the announcement. But yeah, we are ready as a nation. I think we're going to do well. I think we're going to do well. Everybody's excited. You know, and it's not just in Nigeria, you know, the teams that are going to be announced next month. You know, it's not, you know, it's a first for everyone. You know, so it's a first for all the nations. So it's going to be brilliant.
So Adebisi there joining us from Nigeria Rugby League. Matt, it's doing well, isn't it?
Well, I had a great chat with Ade earlier this week, and you know, he's a very, very enthusiastic guy. He's you know, making great progress and giving a great rationale for what he's doing. You know, and as he says, there are some tremendous athletes in Africa that, in his opinion, would love nothing. You know, would really adapt well to rugby league, and I'm sure he's absolutely right. And he also pointed out something I think I said last week that. You know, there are a lot of young Africans who have emigrated to Australia and Sydney in particular, who are just on the verge of coming through into the NRL, you know, and with the growth of Rugby League Nines, I think that would be particularly, you know, it's very hard for a new country to come in and compete at 13-a-side. You know, it's harder than it is in football, for example. But at nines, which is a sort of different version of the game, it becomes a much more level playing field. I think that would be a great start for them to get involved, if they could do, in, you know, World Nines competitions. And I think, make an absolutely massive impact. Not just Nigeria, by the way. There are quite a lot of players coming through our competition here who come from Zimbabwe, for example. You know, Massimo Tongo at Hull, Judah Mazive at York, and
Tatis Kwaze at Wakefield.
He's gone on loan or dual reg to Oldham. You know, there are kids coming through, and it's just great to see, I think. And, you know, we've always had this thing in rugby league of getting new people involved in the game, and I'd love to see some progress that Adi could make.
And not just that as well. He told me off air, he's getting emails in French from players in Absolutely. Cameroon who are saying, how can we get involved and stuff
Absolutely,
like that. So
yes.
it's all growing nicely. That's nearly it for this week's Total Rugby League show, but just enough time for one last interview. And last weekend saw Wigan take on Saints in the first ever tie in the Community Integrated Care Learning Disability Super League. Here is John Hughes with more.
Yeah, so essentially Community Integrated Care, one of Britain's biggest and most successful charities. The charity supports about 3,500 people across the country. And we've worked with rugby league clubs for a number of years. So the likes of Widnes Vikings and St. Helens, and those clubs do some fantastic community projects. And I think essentially our charity is seeing the unbelievable work that's happening with Learning Disability Rugby League and football. What can we do to help make it bigger, better, to provide some training, to provide some investment? And where we've ended up with is, as you say, a really groundbreaking project, the Community Integrated Care Learning Disability Super League. So it's the first time ever a disability sport initiative has been given the same brand as a professional sports league. So I think that's a massive testament for how sort of inclusive and welcoming rugby league is. And to have 12 clubs from across the country, so some of the really big clubs plus some of the emerging clubs like Newcastle and York, unbelievable.
I've seen a couple of videos as well, and one of the things that gives players the ability to do is to play for their childhood clubs. I know you've just seen this weekend Wigan against St. Helens, and what does this mean for the participants themselves?
It's massive. I think it's bigger than any of us can sort of comprehend, because it's really hard to relate to how many barriers people with learning disabilities and autism have in front of them. You know, there's a lot of prejudice, there's a lot of hate crime, there's a lack of opportunities. So in so many ways, this is going some way to helping to make those different situations better. I think fundamentally you're right. It gives people the opportunity to wear the shirt of the club that they love. And what that does for a person's confidence is unbelievable. There's a lot of loneliness and isolation, sadly, amongst people with learning disabilities. A lot of people have only got their own family in their lives, or maybe someone who's paid to care for them. By these clubs creating these learning disability rugby league teams, people are creating friendship groups and got like a sort of a common thing to bond over. And hopefully as well, because of the sort of pedestal that the Rugby Football League and the Super League have put this on, it's just going to make a massive statement to the wider public out there about the potential of people with learning disabilities and how we should all sort of respect the contribution and what people can achieve.
And like we started this interview, to, you know, talking about the word groundbreaking. I mean, you know, for all the RFL and Super League to give their back in the way they have to try and integrate it in with the Magic Weekend as well. This is a springboard, not just for players of rugby league, but also across all sports. And it's the RFL and Super League and yourselves who've helped spring this forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the sport of rugby league deserves tremendous, tremendous credit for how inclusive it is, because I think sometimes community project through sport can fall a little bit in the category of PR, whereas I think what you've got with Rugby League is real strides to grow the women's game, the physical disability game, the learning disability game, categories for all different age groups. So, yeah, absolutely. I do think it's genuinely to the credit of the sport of Rugby League how inclusive it is. We met Robert Elston, and it's pretty much sort of 1 month into his time as Super League chief executive, and basically the thing that we put to him was this idea that community integrated care can work with Super League and help make Rugby League and the Super League the most inclusive sport in the world, and that was something he really seized upon. And I think, you know, to have someone at the top level of the game want Rugby League's values to absolutely shine through, want to make them inclusive, want to make that statement a reality is massive. And same goes for the people we've worked with on a day-to-day basis at the Rugby Football League. Their sort of commitment to sort of making this happen has been fantastic. And as I say, that I think that's a real sort of feather in the cap of the sport.
What is the future now? I mean, we started off with 12 yeah. clubs. Where could it go from here?
It could be massive. I think, firstly, Community Integrated Care has become the official social care partner of Rugby League. So beyond supporting the Community Integrated Care Learning Disability Super League, that gives us the opportunity to work with each club directly and sort of expand what they do in the community. So probably we're looking to work with a lot of clubs around sort of projects that help people with learning disabilities to take part in sports and activity and make friendships and go to the game. So a whole host of projects. We're also looking at things like dementia cafes. So the partnership between the charity and the sport is a real sort of springboard to a whole range of different community projects. And then, as you say, for the Learning Disability Super League, that can only sort of carry on growing. I think Magic Weekend is going to be fantastic in the sense it will really encourage a number of people to sort of play it, start to learn about it, get involved, whether that's playing or volunteering. And then separately for us as a charity, one of the things that we're really keen to do is to help make sure that we're providing a really quality product. So we're arranging a number of training sessions for clubs across the country, and we hope that training will help basically everything they do to be a bit more inclusive. So to help shape their community projects, how people experience match days, to help the community departments of each club think about some different ideas for how they can work with different groups.
Is everyone looking forward to the Magic Weekend then?
Yeah, we launched that at Old Trafford. So we had a launch event at Old Trafford with a number of Learning Disability Rugby League players and then a few sort of mainstream Super League players. When we announced that it was taking place at Magic Weekend, you could have picked people's jaws off the floor. Honestly, everyone was so excited to be playing Anfield. And, you know, it's massive for our charity as well to be able to shape something that can be showcased on sort of one of the most iconic football stadiums in the world and Rugby League sort of showcase events. Yeah, it's massive for everyone.
John Hughes there from Community Integrated Care. And for more on the Learning Disability Super League, you can follow them on Twitter. That's at LD Super League. That's love for that, isn't it?
It's mm-hmm. tremendous, yeah, yeah. Again, it just sort of illustrates how inclusive, you know, rugby league is, and how we bring people into the game who perhaps wouldn't try some other sports, you know. So it's a great development.
A couple of parish notices. Rugby League World is out on Friday.
Friday.
Yes. What's in it?
A lot.
Good.
We've got Blake Austin's a cover star. We have. I did a piece on players who almost came to Super League.
which, from rugby union or
from anywhere, basically big names.
No, he doesn't know any of the rugby union rules.
I mean, well, yeah, there was someone, Jonah Lomu. I was like, who's that? Sorry, I do know Jonah Lomu. But so we did. I thought it'd be like two pages because I didn't think anyone would tell me anything, and it's. I really wanted to extend it to 10.
Absolutely compelling read, I've got to say.
Yeah, so yeah. I enjoyed that. We got a new columnist in Luke Gale. So the idea behind that is that I think it's really important that we help educate people as well. And I think we don't really understand the trials and tribulations of a rehabilitation. We know they can't play, we know they go for an operation, but I really want to get to the nitty-gritty of what actually happens. So Luke's going to be, for the next however long he's out, will be doing a monthly column for us. So really pleased with that. And then there's all the usual international stuff, as whether we've got something on Partizan, we've got Steve Mascot's done a piece with Red Star talking about their aspirations, various other things as well, and you know, all the usual stuff. So yeah, really looking forward to getting that out there and getting the feedback from everyone on it.
And new League Express out on Monday.
Yeah, be you know, back to we're leaving the World Club Challenge behind, of course, but there's still loads and loads of stuff. We'll have to see who's at the top of the league by next Monday morning, but everything about the game you could possibly want to read. And, should be in League Express.
And TotalRL.com, the place to go for your subscriptions, not just to League Express, but also to Rugby League World. Also available in all good news agents from Friday.
I'm just writing a column about dual registration at the minute.
Oh, happy days, everyone. Doug Thompson, a big thank you for joining us this week.
It's a pleasure.
Matthew Shaw, always a pleasure. And Marty Sadler, thank you very much.
Not a pleasure in my
case. Well, no, I couldn't repeat the same thing again. Thank you, Martin, for joining us. You've been lovely.
It's great. Thank you.
Wherever you're going this weekend to watch your Rugby League, make sure you have fun. Take care.